Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
I have used Section 8 to actually drive some of my rents where I couldn't get the rent that I wanted. I could get it from Section 8, and so that set a new bar.
Best ever listeners, you ready to take your online advertising into the big leagues? Are you ready to get more leads? Well, how about we do all this for free? Yeah, sure, free. Well, it starts out with a free strategy session with Dan Barrett. You recognize his name, episode 565, titled Google AdWords and Cutting Edge Strategies. He's the only certified Google partner agency that works exclusively with real estate investors. That's why I'm talking about him. And he's managed over $1 million of client spend and scored an 80th percentile for or higher for best practice. Basically, he knows his stuff. And he is offering a free strategy session for 1 hour to do a deep dive with you and learn about your market and collaboratively come up with an online advertising strategy based on your target audience. And he's offering to do this for the best ever listeners. Go to adwordsnerds.com/Joe. Now, I mentioned free. Well, the strategy session is free. And then you can either take the online advertising strategy that he comes up with on the call and go implement it yourself. There you go. It's free. Or you can have him and his agency do it for you. It's a turnkey solution. And by the way, that likely will end up being free too, assuming that you're closing on the leads that he's generating for you as a result of all the efforts. Go to adwordsnerds.com/Joe. He's got some amazing stuff. Ask him about the pre-targeting for direct mail lists that he does. It's something unique to their company, and it's pretty exciting stuff. He's noticing some tremendous results as a result of doing pre-targeting. So ask him about that. AdWordsNerds.com/Joe. Best ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Joe Fairless. This is the world's longest running daily real estate podcast. We only talk about the best advice ever. We don't get into any of that fluffy stuff. With us today, Kurt Bidwell. How you doing, Kurt?
Hey, I'm doing great today. Thanks.
Nice to have you on the show. Looking forward to digging in a little bit about Kurt. He is a managing partner at Phila Holding Company. Started in real estate in 1990 with three partners and a fourplex while serving as a full-time youth pastor.
And over 26 years, he has bought out each partner and accumulated several single-family homes, duplexes, a 10 and 24-unit apartment, and a 42-unit mixed-use building. So with that being said, Kurt, you want to give the best ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on now?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, we began back in 1990, so we've been at it for a while. I started with three friends in a fourplex, didn't really know what I didn't know. And so, you know, over the years, we thought we'd accumulate a few things, eventually pay them off. Someday we'd have a little money out of it. But as time went on, actually about 10, 12 years, one of the partners moved out of the area. We bought him out. And I was looking at my own finances and saying, what do I need to retire? And I thought, well, we've got these 10 units. If we had those paid off, I could have maybe four more units, so maybe two more duplexes. So I went hunting for some units. I ran into an agent that had a broad range of experience in rentals, in marketing, and various aspects of construction. And so she put together an exchange for us where we got rid of our old two-bedroom, one-bath units, and we 1031, we exchanged into 13 new construction, single-family duplexes, going from the little two ones to three and four bedroom, two and a half bath. We had little 685 rents. We were instantly up to 1150. We went from low and no income clients to state workers, military families, attorneys, real estate agents, other gainfully employed residents.
What was the exchange between what to what?
We went from 10 two-bedroom, one-bath units to 13 brand-new construction. Some that was a mix of single-family, some duplexes. We had three and four-bedroom units. And, you know, the trajectory of growth and expansion was new to our just whole way of thinking. And we began to get some new information how we could finance these things and actually have cash flow immediately rather than waiting for 15 or 20 years to pay them off and have some resources. So we continued to grow. Today I have 87 units and a property that I'm working on, a short plat.
You've got to educate me. You said a short plat. I don't know what that is.
Well, a short plat is when you take a property, and in our area, you can divide it up to four total building sites. A full plat would be anything above that. And so for a reasonable cost, relatively speaking, you can have your engineering and your site work done and submit that to the city and get approval to have multiple building sites. Of course, depending on how your area is, the type of construction they allow in that area.
Basically, you have a piece of land and you're dividing it up into four sections to build four separate things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. Basically it.
What are you building?
I hope not to actually build my
smart.
I want to get them planted and move on. I bought this property 13 years ago for some good friends, had a nice house on it, cedar home, had a large shop attached to it, and it was just perfectly well suited to their needs and their business. And unfortunately, life didn't turn out well for them. And instead of them buying the home from us, they went their separate ways. They each packed a suitcase and left us with a hoarder's house. And so we have spent quite a bit of time cleaning up the yard, cleaning up the basement, cleaning out the house, doing a remodel inside, and then concurrent with that, working on the short plat. So hopefully the completion of the house will be ready to sell the house at a similar time as the plat finishes.
Mm. All right. Now let's back up a little bit. You did the 10 two-bedroom, one-bath units to 13 new construction. How are you able to do that? Because the rents, you said were so much greater on the new stuff. Did you put more money into the acquisition of these new properties?
We did a 1031 exchange, and we had held those 10 units for in excess of 10 years. And so we had accumulated quite a bit of equity. And so when we did the exchange, we put, now I have to go back, this is 2003, 2004, and our market was just tearing it up. Things were growing fast, selling fast. And so we were able to take that equity and put it into those other units. And we did a lot of 80-10-10s. We put 10% down, took a 10% second, and an 80% first. I'm not sure that that's completely doable in today's climate, but we actually, within 9 months, were refinancing some of those pieces that we had just purchased and pulling money out to go buy more stuff. So we were highly leveraged. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that level of leverage today, but it did work out for us at the time. And we were able to get into some newer, nicer properties, a whole different clientele. And that's something I think listeners would appreciate knowing, is there is a rental market at every socioeconomic level of society. Mm-hmm. Whether they're a $300 or $400 studio or a $10,000 a month luxury home, there's a market there. Don't be afraid of it.
What market do you focus on?
I have a couple of markets. I have apartments, and so most of my apartments are two bedroom, one bath. We have student clientele. I do cater to some Section 8 subsidized housing. And then I've got three and four bedroom homes in nice neighborhoods. Like I said, we've got professionals, state workers, military families, just a variety of folks. And they're paying in that 1500 range, you know, 14 to 1800 for those homes. Whereas our two bedrooms are in that 900 to 1000 range.
Talk to us about Section 8, pros and cons.
Oh, wow. It depends on who you are and what your tolerance level is.
Please educate.
Well, Section 8, of course, is a government program. It's income-based, and so there are project-based, and there are coupon-based programs. If you have a project-based, your whole complex will be Section 8. Everybody in it, they have to qualify. I do not do that. I do the coupon-based, so somebody has the benefit, and they come to me, and they say, will you accept Section 8 for this unit? And, you know, I have kind of a percentage that I work with around our complex, but
what is it?
Roughly 30%.
And how'd you come up with 30?
It's just my own preference, quite honestly. I allow about 30% Section 8. I allow up to about 30% student population, and the rest of it is open market.
And why not 80% Section 8?
I like the dynamic of a mix, different people, different needs, and I don't want everybody there being subject to government subsidy. I don't want to be fully obligated to that and dependent on that. And so for us, that's worked out pretty well, and we have a good mix of tenants. They tend to get along pretty well, and so it's worked out for us, and that's just how I do it.
Now, just to go maybe more specific into Section 8 pros and cons, what would you say are the three reasons or fewer that you do it, and then three reasons or fewer that you wouldn't do it more?
The most obvious is your rent is predominantly guaranteed. It's income-based, so every tenant is going to have a different percentage that they're obligated to pay, not a percentage of the rent. It's based on a percentage of their income, but I have had tenants who pay $8 to $10 a month, and the government's paying the whole balance. I have others who are paying all but maybe $100 or $200 of it, and so it's a huge range depending on their income and needs at the point they qualify, and then they adjust annually. But so that's the number one thing. I have used Section 8 to actually drive some of my rents where I couldn't get the rent that I wanted. I could get it from Section 8. And so that set a new bar. So I could then say, well, I've got X number of units rented at this rate. And so that's the new market for us. And that's worked actually pretty successfully in a couple of different complexes. On the downside, you're dealing with people who sometimes have a mentality of gimme, gimme.
Mm-hmm. Entitlement.
Exactly. And so I had one gal, she lived in the complex for 4 years, hadn't had a rate increase. This is when I had a property manager handling it. I do it myself right now and in this complex. And so I went to give her an increase, and she's like, how dare you? I've been a good tenant. I've been here 4 years. And I was like, well, you know, the costs have increased exponentially in these last 4 years. the taxes, the insurance, the water bill, my goodness. And she couldn't understand how that economically worked. I was just benefiting because I was getting a taxing or a pay increase from her. So there is that entitlement mentality. Not everybody is as clean as somebody else. and that's a general statement. That's not specific. Because I have some Section 8 folks that are fantastic. And they've been with us for 3, 4, 5 years. No problems, no issues, take great care of their place. So it comes down to screening. You're going to screen them the same as you are anybody else. If you have the opportunity, go look at their, you know, their current place. See how it compares to your expectations. We've had a few drug problems. We've had a few prostitute problems that have come out of that. And when we terminate them, they also tend to lose their Section 8 benefits. So it's a big loss to them. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of that hammer to hold over them to say, hey, you need to comply or else you're going to lose it. And sometimes that works. Sometimes, unfortunately, it doesn't.
What type of paperwork is involved to evict them, knowing that there's, you know, the government paperwork that you had to fill out to bring them in?
In our jurisdiction, I would evict them the same as any other tenant. I would serve them notice, and I would concurrently give a copy of that to their caseworker.
Okay.
And sometimes that solves the problem. There's nothing special that I would do other than informing the caseworker of what we're doing.
Got it. I want to learn more about rents were driven by Section 8. You know, you got rents at a certain price through Section 8 and then use that to increase prices for future residents. Will you elaborate more on that?
Well, there's a certain level of risk that you're taking on when you accept somebody at that socioeconomic scale. And we need to mitigate that risk by the amount of both security deposit as well as the rent that we charge. We know on average, we're going to have a little more turnover costs when they leave. And so we set our rents accordingly. Where, for example, maybe the market's at 9.25, I may charge 9.50. In some cases, now this varies from different jurisdictions, they will say, I can't move them in at that rate. That's above our rate. So we'll move them in at the 9.25 and concurrently give a 60-day notice of rent increase to what we're expecting. And in our jurisdiction, they'll allow that. I do some in another county where they don't allow that. But so that's kind of a case by case. But yeah, we're able to mitigate some of our costs. And given the level of, well, we just don't have very much available in our market. We're very tight. And so if they want in, they're going to have to, you know, pay whatever we're asking. So, couple of years ago, it wasn't as tight, and we were able to utilize that as a means of setting the standard for that community. And I'm talking with other landlords, other folks in the area to, you know, have a pulse on what the market really is. And when we see it move, then those are usually the first ones that we bump up, because I can do them at pretty much any time of the year. The last 3 or 4 years, I have sent my notices in for January 1 rent increases. Some people get scared at that, say, well, they'll move out in the middle of winter. I find that Section 8 folks usually have kids. They're often in school. They don't want to move during the school year. By the time summer comes around, they've forgotten about it and they're moving on. Mm-hmm. So.
Speaking about segueing, let's talk about students now. You rent to students. Do you do student housing where you rent out the, like, per bed?
No.
Okay.
No, I limit it to per house and or per unit, and there's a limited number based on the units, how many they can have, and we inform them that they are everybody on the contract, they and their co-signer parents are individually and corporately responsible for everything, and we'll go after whoever is left, so to speak, if there's anything remaining. And so, we've not gone the per unit or per bedroom rate route. We've kept it per unit.
Okay.
Keeps it cleaner for us.
Well, then I'm going to shift gears into another line of questioning, and that is, you said you're managing it yourself. 87 units you're managing yourself?
No. I have a 42-unit mixed use and a 10-unit out in an area about 30 minutes from me, and I do have an on-site manager out there, and she handles both of those, the day-to-day routine stuff. So I'm out in that area generally twice a month. But the other ones, yeah, I take care of myself. The single family homes, you know, it's just about turnover, and we have low turnover. Out of my 10 units, I turned one last year. I'm trying to think when the last turnover was, but most of these folks have been with me 3 to 6 years. So those were new construction originally. So there's very little maintenance, and they're stable, solid, employed folks that we just haven't had any issues with. So I don't need to pay somebody else to do what doesn't need to be done. I do have a little more to do in the 24 unit. I'll turn over, I think I turned over maybe 5 or 6 this last year. So even there, it's not high turnover, but it is a little more labor intensive just because of the clientele and their needs and what's going on there. So on average, I have about a third of my tenants in the apartments that will stay a year, under 2 years. I have a third of my tenants that are there for 2 to 5 years, and a third of my tenants stay longer than that. So not a lot of turnover, so I don't find it necessary to pay somebody else to do stuff that doesn't really need to be done.
How do you receive their rent checks?
Mostly by mail.
Some
by direct deposit. Huh. And some of my higher end folks that have bank accounts will do, bill pay and that kind of thing. I am looking at some of those online systems. But some of our lower end folks, you know, they're going out and getting the money order. They don't have bank accounts. And so, we're pretty strict. They got to have it in by the 5th, the houses by the 3rd. And we apply late fees after that. And so some of that's tenant training. Expectations, you know, as they first move in and get established. And I find that once we've got them established and on a system, they're pretty timely overall.
You should check out, if you ever wanted to try and automate that, check out Secure Pay One. The founder was on the show recently, and it seems like it makes a lot of sense for someone in your position who's getting the rents collected via mail, because I imagine that's got to be a process that you'd like to automate more.
Yeah, I would. My son, he actually bought a house when he was 15 and a half. That's a whole nother story. But he's now older. He's working in the Portland area and interviewed with Cozy. And that was fun to learn. You know, I fed him a bunch of my questions and he was able to get those answers from the CEO there directly. So that was very fun. And he didn't end up there, but we're definitely looking at those automated systems for the future.
Yeah. Do you have a bookkeeper?
No, I use QuickBooks and I get my rents, I input them, I go to the bank, it's done. You know, once you know the system, it doesn't take me that long.
What's your focus for 2017?
I am consolidating and cleaning up. I inadvertently bought a house in Florida a number of years ago, and that was a disaster. We'll follow up with that in your final questions, I think. But I've got that one listed. I'm getting that one off my plate. Last year, I got rid of another single property with a small partnership. I have one more small partnership that I'm going to hopefully clean up this year. And then we're working on this property that we are cleaning up and short platting. That's my major project this year. I'm not a guy going out there trying to buy everything that's available. I'm not trying to build a huge, you know, bunch of units. So I tend to do things more one or two at a time. And I find when I get ready for the next step, the opportunities tend to show up. You get your money in line, you get your team in line, and we're ready to go. I just finished a 10-unit renovation last year, and that went very well. It was very exciting, very fun. And that led into this short plat circumstance. I had to buy another house that had the easement, and then we were able to do the rest of the platting. So that's been a real process. It's been a year long working on that. We'll be submitting boundary line adjustment today or tomorrow, I hope. So we're right at that point of submitting stuff. So when that happens, and then we'll put those up for sale. When the money comes in, we'll be looking to do a 1031, exchanging those into probably more multi-units.
You started with partners. You still have some partners and a couple deals. And you said you have since exited out of most of your partnerships. How do you successfully exit out of a partnership and make sure both sides win?
Sure. Great question. Each partnership is a little different. My primary partnership was the three of us that bought in originally back in 1990. And the one partner went broke and moved south, and we bought him out based on his need. The other partnership, the final two of us continued on for 25 years. And I bought him out 2 years ago, and we had a fairly lengthy process of coming to terms with how we were going to divide, what the values were, what the terms were. In this case, he didn't want a cash out, and I didn't have a cash out available for him. And so we had two cornerstone properties, the 24 and the 42 unit, and then we had several duplexes and single families. The duplexes and single families were financed in our personal names, but run through the LLC for all the business aspects. So in the dividing of value, we used those properties in each of our names to create, you know, the basic split. And where there was some not exact numbers, we applied that to the larger units, and then came up with a number, came up with a payment structure. And in this case, it was a graduated structure. So I started out with like $2,000 a month, grew it to 25, now it's three for X number of years. And then, so it's actually a 15-year process that we'll probably finish off sooner. And especially if I do anything with those two cornerstone properties, then I have to give him the option to be paid off or to continue on at that point, depending on his need.
Okay.
Very amicable in the end. There were some tense moments. You know, sure. you're dealing with money and dollars and security, and you know, but we'd worked together for 25 years, had a good level of trust. And so but we did draw it up. We had an attorney go over it. We had our realtor, she's got a copy of it as well. So, you know, there's some accountability there. And so over the last 2+ years, it's worked out very well for him. He's free to go visit his kids and grandkids and do some traveling. And I've been free to handle the properties I see fit and do some financial things with them that probably wouldn't have done in the partnership.
What's your best real estate investing advice ever?
I'm going to call it know your AIT.
Know your, all right.
Know your levels of ability, interest, and tolerance. And then excel in the area of your strength. Let me give you an example. I have a good friend who lives in Brazil. He's a missionary down there. He owns an old Mercedes-Benz. And we had the privilege of visiting his family there a number of years ago. And one day he's out underneath this old Mercedes. The hood is up. And so I'm leaning in and we're talking. And he says, "This old car's never given me a bit of trouble." I said, "So what are you doing down there?" And his response is, "I'm like, oh, I'm just replacing the transmission." To which I respond, "To you, that's no trouble. To me, that's $3,000 worth of headache." But Rick is a car guy. He can fix anything. To him, that's no trouble. I have precious little ability with cars. I have less interest and I have no tolerance. So you got to know your ability, got to know your interest, got to know your tolerance. So when somebody comes up to you and says, "You're a landlord? I could never handle tenants, toilets, and trash. How do you tolerate that?" Well, they obviously don't have any interest, so they've never developed any abilities, and that leads to no tolerance for the tenants and all that goes with it. Mm-hmm. I have a high AIT level when it comes to property. I have a high level of interest. Because of that, I've developed good abilities relative to property, to managing tenants, and of course, that leads to a higher level of tolerance. So somebody puts a hole in the wall, you know, I don't get mad. I get paid. Mm-hmm. We We patch it, we repair it, we charge them for the work. It's a business relationship, not an emotional one. So know your areas of interest, know your abilities and your talents, and then exploit those areas.
Bravo. Thank you for summarizing what I've been thinking, but haven't been able to put it so succinctly. So I certainly will use that, and I will reference that you told me about AIT.
There you go.
You ready for the best ever lightning round?
All right, let's go for it.
First, though, a quick word from our best ever partners. Got your free strategy session to generate online leads yet? Well, if not, go to adwordsnerds.com/Joe. Dan Barrett's going to give you a concrete online advertising strategy by the end of the conversation. You can choose to implement it yourself, or you can work with this team and they'll implement it for you. adwordsnerds.com/Joe. Best ever book you've read?
The most life-impacting book, I think, would certainly be the Bible. Another excellent book I've recently read was The Go-Giver by Bob Berg and John Mann.
Yep, that's a good one. And best ever listeners, just search Bob Berg and Joe Farrellis, and you'll listen to Bob's interview. He's actually been interviewed twice on this podcast.
Excellent.
Best ever deal you've done?
I have to think about that, how I quantify the best deal. But here's a good example. For the dollars invested, I bought a nice four-bedroom cedar home, 2.4 acres in the city limits. I had it rented for 13 years, now doing a rehab where the tenants left us a hoarder's mess. It was a junkyard in the yard. The house was full of literally everything. I have 100 hours cleaning out the basement alone. But we're cleaning it up, remodeling it, doing a short plat to add 3 additional lots. When that's complete, I should realize about a 25 time the investment originally.
What's the biggest mistake you've made on a deal?
Oh, the biggest mistake is too easy. I bought a house across the country without proper due diligence. I live in Olympia, Washington, just south of Seattle, and I bought this in Central Florida on the word of a well-intentioned friend. True rents were 25% below expectation. Our property management structure fell through. Of course, the market crashed, and the property, I currently have it on the market. It will sell for about 75% of what I bought it for, and I will be happy it's gone. And cool. So the lesson is, do your own due diligence. Don't take the word of somebody else.
That reminds me of a quote. I'm going to butcher it, but if an enemy gives you Kool-Aid, you'll be okay. But if your best friend accidentally knocks over some poison and you drink it, then you're screwed. So it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter the intention of the person. It's all about the end result.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's the best ever place the best ever listeners can get in touch with you?
You know, I'm on Bigger Pockets pretty regularly. That's probably the best place, through the forums, and connect with me there.
Kurt, thank you for being on the show and sharing your story. We talked a lot about different things, from the pros and cons of having Section 8 residents. Pros, your rent's predominantly guaranteed, and you also used it to drive rents within your property from the rents you were getting. And then cons, perhaps you've got some more issues and having a higher turnover cost that's involved whenever they move out, as well as the AIT, knowing what our AIT is, abilities, interests, and tolerance. So thanks so much for being on the show. Hope you have a best ever day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.